Hello and welcome to the Care for the Family podcast with me, Mark Chester, Stephen Hayes.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
And Adam Hewlett.
Thank you.
Adam is our special guest today, and this is the Dad Cave where we discuss fatherhood in its varying forms and we unpack some of the things that just often don't get talked about. So, Adam, welcome to the Dad Cave. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm not going to mention my name because you just said it, so that's obvious. I now live in Chester, but obviously you can tell I'm Mancunian.
But the red side.
And I've been married 9 years to my wife, Jo. I have a little girl as well. And at the moment, I'm here with you guys, talking about being a dad.
Brilliant. Well, it's fantastic.
That brings us right up to date.
See, I thought I'd round it off.
Yeah.
So how old is your daughter? And what's
she
called?
She's seven, and she's called Gracie, but I call her G. Yeah. Well, it's called a G, and I think she loves that. I call her G Money, G Unit, G G Rizzle, and she just loves it. She just goes over edge, goes, all right, Daddy, yeah. So I find it funny, so it gets me through the day.
Well, Adam, it's great to have you here and talking about all things to do with being a dad. We always start off these Dad Caves with a dad joke. Now, I know you've got some professional experience of this because you've done some stand-up comedy in the past with some of the greats. So who did you do stand-up comedy with?
I did a stand-up sort of session thing with sort of workshop with Peter Kay, and I did that, and it was like a Whose Line Is It Anyway sort of thing, and we did that, and that was really good, and he gave us all like tips on how to do stuff. Yeah. So that was really, it was really good actually. We got a lot from it, and we did a little sort of thing with him, like a skit with him, and I was included in that, so I was very honoured. So it's superb, so I really enjoyed that. And Northwest Tonight and Granada came and all this, but a long time ago, I was younger then.
It'd be nice to have a bit of humour on the show for once.
Yeah, well, got the right one.
So we are expecting great things from you when your turn. Yeah, yeah. We're going to build up gradually to you. So we're going to start with the weakest joke teller. So, Stephen, over to you.
I'm pushing back on this because I'm like the warmer backed every time. You go first, then I'll go. Yeah.
Okay, all right, I'll go first.
He drops you right in it.
He does.
To be honest, the joke I've got today, I think, probably needs to go first and be got out of the way.
Go on then.
So here we go. So do you want to hear a joke about a piece of paper?
Yes.
I don't think I'll tell you because it's terrible.
Oh,
yikes.
Boom, boom.
That is terrible. I
know. It's probably one of my worst. So, Stephen, come on. You've got to be better than that.
Well, it's right up your street, actually. Last weekend, Imogen asked, can I hold the bookmark? I couldn't believe it. 2 years old, and she still doesn't know my name is Stephen.
It's quite good, though.
I do like that one, actually. Yeah. I do like that one. I might use that myself.
Yeah, you could do that, yeah.
Right, so we know we're the warm-up act for the professional joke teller. Come on, Adam.
Okay.
My cheek's already hurting.
So, I've got a joke that I was going to tell you about a time machine I built, but you guys didn't like it.
That is good. Fair play. Original?
No, I think it was out my joke book for 7-year-old, so.
Nice.
Back to the Future. Classic,
yeah,
really.
It works on at least three levels, as far as I can tell.
At least three levels. At least.
Past, present, and future.
Exactly, yeah. See that?
Literally couldn't write it.
Yeah. Bouncing right off each other.
You see, yeah, you've just got something there. That Where's understanding, the bats? Haven't you? I guess it's both being Manchester United supporters, maybe.
Yeah.
That does it.
We've got a strong sort of bond. Yeah.
Well, let's move into the topic that we're going to discuss today, because we're going to be talking about what it's like to be a dad who has struggles with his mental health and how our mental well-being affects us in the way we parent our children. So, Adam, perhaps you could tell us a little bit about your story.
Yeah. So I think from a young age, I think I've always suffered with my mental health, but I didn't realise it was. I think it was always very anxious about things. I didn't want to do other stuff that children wanted to do, but I didn't know that was it. I thought being a lad, I was being a bit soft. And I think you think that, like, oh, I'm just being a bit mardy, and that's what you get told. So I just carried on with my life, not thinking about that, and carried on through my years and just always had that sly anxiousness about stuff. And as I got older, I started to realise I was always very snappy. and always very angry about things. And I was just, and I was like, why am I like this? And I just thought he was a bit like, because I'm a man, and a bit like my dad was a bit like this. So I thought, oh, I'm just naturally like my dad. And I was grumpy. And then later on, I realised once I got with my wife, it was more than that. I just broke down to her one day, I think, and we just literally, she figured out when it's to go to the doctors, and they diagnosed me with anxiety and depression. And I'm from there onwards, obviously, you know, I got help, but it took a long time. If you think about from when I got diagnosed with it, I was about 30. So probably took me a good, you know, in my teens, a good 20 years to realise that I wasn't just being, you know, a mardy or a soft lad, that I actually ended up, it was something that was a problem with me that I can't control. So that was a big realisation when it happened. And
at 30, that's quite late then.
Yeah. I just thought I was, just, like I said, just being a bit soft. I always thought that. I just thought, oh, I'm being pathetic. I'm being a bit, come on, get a grip.
Almost making it worse then.
Yeah. And I avoided stuff. And the triggers were things like, for example, I always needed to go to the toilet. And I was like, why do I always need to go to the toilet? Like, all of a sudden. So if I went somewhere, I needed to know where the toilet was. And I didn't think, I just thought, oh, this is just, oh, I've got, you know, problems, you know, it's fine. And I didn't think it was anything to do with anything. And then later down the line, I realised it's all connected.
So if that happened at 30, then what brought it about then? What was the thing that...
Well, I think my wife could see it. She could see it in me. She could see me snapping at the littlest things, and I did things that wasn't very nice. And she knew that I was a nice person inside. You know, she knew. She was like, well, you know, a marriage. This is obviously, and sorry, this is actually pre-marriage. And she was like, I know this. You know, you're nice in there, and I know this is hard for you. What is it? And then gradually, once something did happen, a personal thing. In the end, I was like, right, I've just got to break down. In the end, I just broke down to her. And I literally opened, it's like cliche, opened the floodgates, and I couldn't stop crying then. But even then, I thought, I don't want to see me cry. Even then, I was like, oh, no, I'm not crying. Don't see me cry. No, don't stop it.
Someone's cutting onions, kind of.
Yeah, I'm all right. Still, even though I've just admitted it to someone, I was still embarrassed because, again, I don't know to see, you know, a grown man cry. But when I look back now on it, that's a pathetic thing to think. But when you're so deep in there, you don't think about that. Mm. And being a male, you think, and especially when you're growing up with strong male people around you, they didn't do that. They shouted.
Well, what you perceive to be strong, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. But strong to me now is being someone that can have, you know, more of an open thoughts and relationship about stuff. But then it was all about the cliche of man up, the classic man up. Mm. You know, the man goes to work, the man does this, the man sorts out stuff. And it was completely wrong.
You know what strikes me about you talking about that is that it's so difficult to identify in ourselves mental ill health at times, isn't it? Depression or whatever it is. It's quite difficult to identify that in ourselves. We can attribute it to other things. It could be, oh, I'm just feel tired for some reason. I don't know why, but maybe I'm working too hard. Mm. Or we might think, oh, this is only temporary. Once I get through, then I'll be fine. Or we might even be thinking, I suppose, well, we've got a physical illness.
Yeah.
You know, that there's something seriously wrong with us. And that's why we feel like lead or whatever, you know, we feel heaviness. And then the other thing, sometimes it takes, from what you're saying with Joe, it takes someone else to point out to us that, you know, things aren't quite right. We need some help. Mm. And was it Joe who sort of pushed you to go along?
Yeah, she realised it because I was, like you said, the going back to what you said about not feeling right. And, you know, the one of the things that people, if you're looking into depression, you'll say, oh, as the person not, you know, take care of their appearance, have they gone? And I think it's the opposite. I was having haircuts, I was making sure I looked smart because I was actually hiding things inside. So outside, I didn't know to see what was going on. So I was looking smart, I was looking dapper. But people think, oh no, that's what they do when people get depressed. They walk around like ER from Winnie the Pooh. And you're just like, they don't walk around going, oh, I'm depressed today. It's all inside, so you cover it up. And that's what Joe ended up seeing. She said, you're hiding something, you keep on buying stuff to cover up what you're actually feeling. So if I was bored or if I was feeling anxious, well, I'll go out and get something. Didn't need to do that. But that led towards my father used to do that as well. He would buy stuff to sort of cover up any sort of issues or to help. Whereas now I realise it's better off not doing that and actually addressing it. And it was Joel that found this sort of pattern. Mm-hmm. And she would see, and the angerness as well, the anger. You become angry. We often find that a lot of young men as well, we're angry for a lot of things. And we don't need to be. Why are we so angry? Why?
Were there other things that you used to sort of cover up your mental illness or to cope with your mental illness because you weren't even aware that you were depressed? Were there other ways that you coped?
I think when I was younger, I drank a lot as well. And I think I was very, to cope with all of that, when I didn't realise what it was as well, I wasn't very nice, but also I would make sure I would sort of con people into giving me stuff or anything else like that. And I was hiding stuff to sort of for I was crying inside, I was trying to get out. It's a bit like with the scene in Alien, when it's popping out. That was like my little depression alien. It was trying to get out, but I was like, no, you're going back in and I'm going to do something else. And I didn't, like I said, I didn't see this happen. I did not see all these things happen. And I would happily get smashed on the weekend and carry on. And again, it's not always about, oh, someone's drunk over time, or it could be something as you may not even be a drinker and you might do something else, but you'll see unusual patterns and it's not always the obvious things. And I just, it was deep down, because it was that long, you said before, when I was 30, it was deep down right to my toes. It was hidden away and it wasn't coming out
So once you went to the doctors then and this started to emerge that, oh, you might need, you know, some help here.
Yeah.
Naturally, we would know today, basically, what they give you is like a mood supplement, really. Yeah. But the stigma, I'm not going to hazard a guess as to when you were 30, how long ago you were 30.
JK.
Yeah, I'll let you do that. But what was your initial response to when the doctor said, I think this is what's going on and I think this is what's going to help?
Yeah.
How did you come to terms with, okay, was there an initial pushback in you, like inside, or did you think, or at that point were you like, no, this is what I need?
I think there was a bit of pushback because when they offered counselling, that I was happy to take the medication. I thought, okay, that would do. But the counselling, I was like, I avoided it for about a year. Because I was like, I don't want to speak to people about it. I can't, because if I open up, I'm going to open too much. And I think one of the worst times is when I think going to the doctor and saying, when they're asking questions, have you ever felt like harming yourself? Have you ever felt like killing yourself? And you've got to be honest. And the fact that you're questioning it in your head, not going tick, no, I'm going, it should be a no.
Sobering, isn't it? Yeah.
But you, in the end, you're going, do I? And then it starts realization of this is bad. But gradually, a realization of the counseling, I did get round to it. And I did do it, and it was one of the most like eye-opening things, because at the end of the day, this person doesn't know you, so you can say, in a way, what you want. And it was great. It was a relief, and I felt like I was just given a luggage, unwanted luggage, and she was getting it and throwing it away from me. And it was hard to do, but I think it was beneficial, and that was the only pushback I had. I was a bit like, and also telling people as well. That was one of the things, but then a lot of people, once I told him, was like, that makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah. And it was like little things. And I was like, and that felt better for me to show that I wasn't just being a moody man or a grumpy man. There was a reason why I felt like this. So, yeah.
For the sake of the non-Manchester based, Mardy.
Mardy, all right. Sorry, yeah, Mardy. that's been a bit soft. It's been a bit of a...
Bit grumpy,
a bit just weak.
The hump.
Yeah, the hump, yeah, being Mardy, yeah. So that's what it is. It's, you know, anyone, you know, but Mardy,
We'll put it in the Dad Cave dictionary.
Yeah, putting it, yeah, definitely.
So,
yeah.
So we might have a few of these interludes during this episode of the Dad Cave while we explain some words.
Yeah, sorry. Get a little translation there.
Adam, yeah, yeah. I'm just thinking about when you became a dad. So we're all dads, and we know that becoming a dad, great joy, but let's be honest, it can be really stressful as well, can't it? So how did that impact, you know, when you became a dad to Gracie, how did that impact your mental health, Adam?
I think at first I put it away. I boxed it off because at the same time that Gracie arrived, my mum passed away of cancer. So I had to deal with that as well as obviously having a child. So during this time, I put it away. And then everything was sort of fine and it was going sort of okay, managing all right. And then we went on holiday 1 year and I was with Gracie. I was walking, just having a nice walk with her. And I went back and I said to Joel, I said, I'm not feeling good. She went, how bad? I said, just don't want to be here anymore. That's it. I just want to kill myself. And she was like, what? And we was on holiday. We was on holiday, like somewhere where you feel you're relaxed. So, and feel somewhere where you feel sort of chilled. No. I thought, I had an idea, man. Once we go back, that's it. But I had my girl there. And I was like, why would I think that? My girl's my, she's my... my amazing, she's precious. And so...
Was that quite scary to have had, like, yeah. gone there in your head?
Yeah.
Were you almost having a conversation with yourself?
Yeah.
Like...
Yeah, yeah, I knew. So the one thing I realised, I had to say it quick. I had to say it quick, because if I don't say it, yeah. it'll take over. So I had to say it, and I remember it, and I remember it clear as day, because the rest of that holiday, I remember Joel, like, watching me like a hawk. I got the pool, and if I went to her to the bar, she was like... Where are you? He was gone more than 15 minutes. And it was like, no wonder she felt like that. So I had to tell her all of this stuff. But at the same time, I was like, why am I feeling like this? All I wanted is a child in my life, and now I feel like this. And it felt like it was quite a big burden. And actually, ironically, felt like I was letting Gracie and Joe down. And that's quite weird because so I thought, if you take me out the picture, they can live okay.
Man. I remember the first one of these we did, we were talking about my daughter was only, I think, 8 months old at the time, and I was kind of commenting on how in the journey of having Imogen, at no point were there any checks as to how I was doing.
Yeah.
And that's not at all to say the level of checks they give the child and the mum. I want that. I was happy with that.
Yeah.
And that's true whether it be... you know, through birth or adoption or whatever the case may be. But I think the fact that there was no check on, like, how's the dad doing mentally, any of that was quite... I didn't even realise at the time. And then we started discussing things, Mark. It kind of struck me that I was like, oh, yeah, like, no, at no point in this whole thing has there been any point in the process to be like, how's dad doing?
Yeah.
And you do kind of feel a massive sense of pressure and responsibility. Mm. And it doesn't often get talked about, does it?
No.
I think that's a great point, because if you're not asked the question, then it's almost you feel like it's not valid to be experiencing this because mum's being asked the question, so it's clearly okay for her to experience because she's been asked, how is she mentally? If you're not being asked the question, I guess you might think, well, it's not valid for me to feel like that. I've got to be somebody different rather than, you know, rather than to address what's going on inside.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think it was interesting that it was at the point where you should have been at your most relaxed, where you felt the weight so almost most tangibly and most potently.
Mm.
I think it goes without saying over the past year, people who've had zero mental health issues in their life would now know what tangible anxiety feels like.
Yeah.
And I think that's true across the board. And I've had moments in the last year where I've just been like, I felt the anxiety in a way that I never have before. But I've kind of ridden it out quite well. I remember I think it was when the hairdressers and barbers opened again. I was going for a haircut and I felt quite relaxed. But all of a sudden, all the weight of the last year and loads of other stuff suddenly caught me off guard. And I felt a little bit like, on edge here.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, isn't it, how the moment where you stop thinking about it, or suddenly it can come out of nowhere. And do you think that's accumulation? Like, it's just one thing after another, and you don't talk about it.
Yeah.
And then suddenly, at the point where you feel almost, I should be relaxed now, and I'm not. Mm. Like, why do you think it played out in that way?
I think you're, the two things that I think, one of the things is, you can have, going back to the relaxing, I could have all the things in the world. You could have millions of things. You could be a millionaire. You could have a happy, you think you're a happy life. You're running around, you're happy, but you can still feel lonely. You can have everything you want. You can have 1,000 friends, but it's in here. You can feel lonely. And that's what I felt at that time when I was on holiday. And I had all the things I wanted. It was nice. I felt lonely. I felt like that was me and the world was over there. And if you just blow me away, no one would notice. And you feel so lonely. The way, and the best thing I found by obviously managing certain things was now is by saying how I feel straight away, or at least texting someone. And during this period, I realised if I end up just saying how I feel, even a little bit, it helps, because what it does, it lifts you off again. And like we said with the hairdresser, because you may not have said it to everyone about how you felt, all of a sudden, at any time at the hairdresser's, why, came tumbling down. Mm. Mine was in, Greece, in a holiday camp. So it doesn't matter where you are. There's no rhyme, there's no reason. It can come at you and attack you from nowhere.
Yeah, and it kind of points to, I guess, the importance of having conversations with other guys, even when you're not in that place. Because in the scenario I just said, I felt anxious like anyone else has in the last year. But I didn't really feel it that potently. And then I felt it really strongly at that moment. So I think it's almost the preventative stuff as well, isn't it? Not just wait until you feel like it's crisis. You need to have ongoing, regular conversations with people about just how you're doing beyond the superficial.
Yeah. It's checking in with people. I remember during lockdown now and again, I had so many people, I'd just text them to say, hello, how are you getting on? That was it. And the reason why I did that is because I know what it felt like. So I just wanted to check in. And these people that I did it to didn't have any mental health issues. I just did it because I felt it must be quite lonely. Being a dad, being in lockdown, when no one's really saying, how are you getting on? How are you getting on? So I just text him, and that whenever, like, even a laugh, even a joke, and what that does, it relieves some tension away from him. At a time, you couldn't really see anyone. And I did that every 3 weeks. I don't know why I did it, I just did it. And I think I did it because I felt, we need to speak more. Because if we don't speak, there's going to be so many young males and older males that are going to, they're going to die. If I'm being blunt with you, they're going to die. Because we should have prevented it. We could have prevented it, but because we don't ask enough questions, we don't speak enough. That's why there's lots of young men and older men dying.
Yeah.
You know?
How's this look for you, Mark, in your life as a father? Like, has there been moments where it's come and gone, or?
Yeah, well, yeah. I've struggled myself with my own mental health over the years and taken, medication, had counselling. Mm-hmm. And I think what you say, Adam, about loneliness is really true, because we feel like sometimes we're the only one. And that's the strength of a conversation like we've got today, is that hopefully the message that gets through is that lots of us struggle with these things. It could be on a spectrum, so it might be, the beginnings of a bit of anxiety over stuff. You talked about anxiety going to the hairdresser, the weight of the last year coming upon us. But if we don't talk about these things, we don't know. And the other extreme, it might be serious mental illness. Mm. But it's really good, I think, that we talk about it, acknowledge it, don't feel that it's any kind of stigma on our character or stain on our character, really. I often think about back to when I was playing football. I get a physical injury and I tell everybody about it. I had a serious leg injury that almost ended my playing days once. Well, I was quite open about it. I wrote about it in a book. It was no hesitation at all. It almost felt like a bit of a badge of honour. I'm still not as free to talk about my mental illness, really. The problems I've had, struggle with my mental state. So it is, I think it's good that we're chatting about this stuff today. And one of the things I'm very conscious of is that, you know, I struggled with depression while the kids were younger. It's how we parent our children through it. One, how does it affect us as a parent, as a dad? And then how do we talk to our kids about it as well? I'm just thinking, Adam, with Gracie. I mean, how does it affect the way you parent Gracie? And how do you talk to her about what you're going through? Do you talk to her?
It's a good question, that, because I think when we had Gracie, I was at a role model of what you do, you shout at the child and they'll listen. And so when I had Gracie, that's what we did. And Joe was like, look, you don't do that. She's not, why would you listen to that? She would just fight, she would just run. And I was like, oh yeah. And gradually I realised this. And this is because I was anxious and I was worried. So I would take an hour by shouting, like, come on, clean this. And you're like, no, calm down. So some days I could be really bad. And, you know, I still am now. And I could break down crying. And I remember one time she said, Gracie, what's up with Daddy? And Joe went, he's got, how can I put it, a poorly soul. And she went, a poorly soul? Does he need a plaster? And I went, no, it's inside. And sometimes it can affect their head and sometimes can make people cry. And she was like, okay, what can I do? Here, have my monkey. And she would give that. And then, so what we would do then, now and again, she knows that people can have issues that physically she can't see. So when I have a bad day, I break down, I could be, so Daddy's a bit poorly soul today. Okay, that's fine. She knows. And that, I believe that's made me a better dad, because she can then come to me and ask me anything and I can tell her, no, within reason, anything as well. You know, there's a line in, let's be honest. Yeah. So I can tell her this stuff now, but she, because we're open with her, she's open with us, hopefully. And I believe that becomes a better relationship. Because what I don't want is for her to not come to me, because I'm a male. I want her to come to anything. There's certain stuff I can't understand as she grows up and she goes into puberty and things like that. And that's fine. But I don't want her to feel that she can't come to her daddy over anything. I felt like that I couldn't go to my parents or my dad, and I don't want that. And that wasn't his fault. That's just the way it was. You know, so I want to change the way I parent. I might have this anxiety, depression, I might have this issue, but I want her to know she can always come to me for everything. Yeah. And hopefully that helps her, really.
So you're being very open with it. Do you think, as Imogen gets older, Stephen, do you think you'll be kind of, will you talk about these things with her, do you think?
It's a good one. I've not really thought about it in great depth. I think post-pandemic, like, life is different, and I believe it's a generational thing, isn't it? And I think the conversations about mental well-being in younger people is going to be far more commonplace going forward. So I think I'm probably of a generation as a parent where this is going to be normal to explain if, you know, mummy's just, yeah, having a poorly soul day. That's such a sweet way to put it. And I think age-appropriate conversations will happen if there's times where other people are feeling down, whereas in years gone by, we might have just brushed it off. There's probably an opportunity now to drip feed information about what it is, to make sure you're feeling okay, communicate your emotions, which we're trying to do even now, almost subconsciously. So if she kicks off, are you feeling sad, Imogen? Yeah, sad. So giving her some vocabulary for what she's feeling, even now. And I think that's kind of just happening organically, probably because, not because we're super parents, but because of the age where we're parenting in, where it feels more natural. Whereas, as you say, previous generations, it just wasn't, it's not they chose not to speak about it. It wasn't even on the radar to speak about. And many men wouldn't have even known what was going on inside them. It's just, you know, that kind of image of parents of ages gone by, just kind of the father just kind of sits and seethes and doesn't really engage with his children. Like, that kind of image, stereotypical as it might be, probably has some sort of mental health struggle under the surface of the pressures or whatever it might be. But it's almost like talking about this stuff is, it's almost like when you're sat in the classroom and you're like, oh, don't really understand what she said here. And you think, I'm not going to be the one to ask. But actually, if you ask, the chances are there's at least 6 or 7 other kids in the classroom also thinking, I didn't capture it. And if you're the one to ask, then the other kids think, oh, thank goodness. So I think as guys, it's like you kind of, where you can, be the one to model that and try and, you can't do it with everyone, of course, but with the men you're closer with, model what it is to be like, yeah, do you know what, I haven't felt amazing this week, and, you know, explain a little bit of why. Because the chances are there's a couple of other guys you are friends with who are also feeling that, and it's almost like the asking the question thing. If you're the one to do it, it might encourage other guys to start speaking more.
Yeah, I love what you say about helping children name their feelings, because that's really right at the start of this, isn't it? It's just allowing them to name their feelings. Yeah. So if Imogen says she's sad, working with that, you know, rather than saying, well, what have you got to be sad about? Or you'll feel better later, and shutting it down, but actually allowing her to express.
And this is
that.
The easiest point in your entire life.
What? Yeah, you've got all the toys in the world, don't worry about it. No, I'll just bought you a Peppa Pig set. You're great. You know, it's not these things that the children have got feelings, and this is what. With Gracie, she often will do her feelings through her monkey. She'll say, monkey's nervous because we're going somewhere. Always monkey. What does monkey feel? Oh, monkey needs a cuddle. Okay. Does Grace need a cuddle? Yeah, okay, I'll have a cuddle.
Sweetheart.
And that's what she does. She does it through that. And I think if you're, again, as you're saying, if you're open with them and if you give them, obviously, more of that sort of openness, I think that will help. It's not easy to do because you have to address your own concerns. But if you do that, you could become, they'll remember it when they're older. They'll remember that. I remember when you told me this, Daddy. And it really stuck to me and made me think, okay. And it really helped me. You just never know.
No.
You know.
One of the things that's sort of intriguing me about this conversation is that you guys are two of the most sort of humorous people I know. You see the funny side of life, both of you. And we're talking about some serious stuff here. So what part does humour play for you in coping with the ups and downs of life and with the ups and downs of parenting?
I'll hand over to the professional.
I'll call it professional. But, massive. For me, humour is massive because it is such a taboo. And I think with any sort of taboo subjects, people don't want to speak about him. So with me, I thought, how can I get over this conversation without people going under? Without people going, oh, this is a grim conversation. Cheers, Ad. Only met you for a coffee. Now I feel down myself. Thank you. And I'm like, oh, what am I supposed to do? So when I see it, when I talk to me, I go, bear with. You might be feeling rubbish after this, but I'm going to talk about mental health. All right? You all right there? And I'll be doing things. I would do things to make it laugh, so make it, so then the taboo goals, they go, okay, I feel better now. And I'll say stuff like, don't worry, I'm not going to get put away. Okay, I'm not going to do this. You don't have to put things away. You know, that's a knife, don't worry. And I know that's quite, you know, sensitive.
It's edgy.
Me. Yeah, it's edgy, but it's for me to say, don't worry, it's okay. I can talk about it without bringing you down. And I remember once we was out on a stag do, and my friend was like, he was drunk and he went, why did you feel you could, you know, kill yourself? I love you. Why would you ever think that? And I'm going, I know, mate, thank you. That's really nice. And he went, come on, let's go and do a shot. And I went, hey, that's not a good idea. Yeah. You know, I'll have a beer, but not a shot.
Thanks for your slurry speech.
Yeah.
He put it to me in an email.
And that's the thing. And it was quite nice, though, because obviously what's been happening is it's been on their minds. And they've obviously gone, I don't know how to say this. And their dads too. And they've gone, oh, I'm going to say it when I'm drunk, probably. And it was really nice in a way. And I think I find my humour really helps me get through, because there's not, in my opinion, there's probably not enough humour about, because people are scared of offending people. But if you're suffering from it, everyone's got the way of coping it. It doesn't mean I'm mocking you. I'm mocking me. I want to mock me, because that's how I get through my day. And I enjoy it. It makes me giggle. It's fine. Because at the end of the day, it's a way of coping. And I find laughter is a key.
So, yeah, so often when you joke on these things, it's you're calling out the... you're not if you say something about that, you're not mocking mental health. You're mocking perhaps the ignorance or the fact that it is this great unspoken thing.
Absolutely.
And humour is such a gift, because it allows us to... If you can't look at the light-hearted side of things, every pretty much everything, you can use humour to lighten things. Because you're right. if you're out with friends and you want to actually get into some of the harder stuff, if you don't bring humour in and some level of warmth, then it is it's a downer. Mm. And you want to say, yeah, I think the way you deal with it is brilliant. Mm. Say, it's going to be a bit sad for a few months, right? Mm. Strap in. It's like, even prefacing it is, it allows everyone else to be like, okay, yeah, this is fine. And so I think it's massively important, because it's serious stuff, but where you can, you know, try not to let it weigh you down more than it needs to. But it's a hard one, and you can't really dissect it too much or even teach it. You just have to feel it with the people you're with. And
yeah. So humour's okay, isn't it? We can talk about serious subjects, absolutely, but I guess what we're saying is humour is okay. If that's how we feel, if that's how one of the things we use to cope, then it's okay to use humour. We're not using it necessarily to cover things up, but we might be using it just to take the sting out of things a little bit.
Yeah, so, nor would you jokingly mock someone who's going through stuff, because, you know, you wouldn't want, oh, here's Lewis, he's, you know, here comes old misery. Like, you wouldn't do that to someone else. But I think when we do it to ourselves, it's actually, it helps other people into the conversation a little bit more.
Yeah, and helps us a bit as well, I think, at times. So,
like I said before, I'm not walking around like Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh. You don't, that's all I like. So when people say that, they go, who? Hey? And they go, Winnie, and he goes, oh. I'm not walking around, like, you won't recognise it. So, but then if I say things like that, people sort of get it. And they go, all right, so you could be like such and such. But yeah, I said, look at Robin Williams, you know, he was really, the way he was, his character, you wouldn't think. So he doesn't have a label, because it's not physical. Just because, you know, he ain't got a badge saying, I'm depressed today, watch out.
Oh, bother.
Yeah, I'm depressed, watch out. I might get a bit snappy. Massive badge,
a little big. Little traffic lights.
Yeah, a little traffic light going back up.
I'm on Amber.
Yeah, back off, brother. I'm down today. It doesn't work like that. So I think being a dad is stressful enough, but being honest and being open, trying to be open, will benefit you and a relationship with your child as well, because I think that will pave a way of honesty down the line. Mm. Obviously, again, as I said before, within reason.
Yeah. And if I'm one of the funniest people you know, I can only conclude you don't know enough people, Mark.
I know plenty of people, but you're still one of the funniest
Thanks,
people.
Mate. That's very cool.
Guys, we're drawing to the end of our time together, really, but we just wanted to ask you, Adam, one last thing, and it's this. If you were able to pass on and to Gracie something, if you want to leave behind something to her, it might be a belief, might be a passion, might be an object, might be something else, what is it that you'd leave for Gracie as a dad?
Well, this has been passed on from my mum, and obviously she died, and she would dance like no one's watching. Say if you're in a shop, music comes on, have a jig. She would dance, and she wouldn't care, because she's like, it's fun, I'm not harming anyone, it's fun, it's happy, I just want to show happy. So the one thing I want to pass on to Gracie is exactly that. Dance like no one's watching and enjoy life. Things be thrown at you, things are going to be hard, but dance like no one's watching. And we both dance in shops now. I say, come here, and she's like, yes, and was in New Look once and we was dancing away. And people, and not one person go, what they're doing? They're smiling. And what we're doing is making other people smile, then why not? Yeah. So, yeah, with Gracie, I just want dance like no one's watching and just share the love, you know, because life's too short.
Well, I think that's a great thing to finish on, isn't it? Because just by you describing that situation, I know it's put smiles on our faces, certainly, thinking of you and Gracie dancing together.
Yeah, if you're listening to the audio, go on YouTube and just check out Adam's moves there.
Yeah. Another one as well.
It's a good point, Stephen, because he's a good mover. Yeah. But I think that's a great point to finish anyway. So, Adam, thank you so much for being
thank
the
you.
Dad Cave.
Cheers.
Thank you for sharing your story. I know it will be very useful to the guys tuning in, and a great encouragement to them. It's been great, hasn't it?
Brilliant. Absolutely
really
fantastic.
Good. So thank you for joining us. Thank you. So that was another episode of the Dad Cave. Thanks for listening or watching, and we hope you can join us next time.